Great. So before we get going here, I thought it was interesting that you announced in a New York Times op-ed, of all places, the Justice Department's position on safe injection sites. That was sort of a interesting way of letting the public know where justice stands. Why was it made in that particular way?
Well, I don't think there should be any surprise about the Justice Department's position on safe injection sites, because as I explained in the op-ed, it's clear that they're unlawful. That is, there's a federal law that prohibits anybody from facilitating the use of illegal drugs. And so I don't think the department's position on that is particularly controversial.
Right. And so, you know, as you cite in the piece, the depth of the opioid crisis in the U.S. really is hard to overstate. I mean, there's so many different ways of putting it. But, you know, more Americans died of drug overdoses in 2016, mostly from opioids, than the entirety of the Vietnam War, right? This is definitely a crisis. What does the Justice Department see as the best response to this?
Well, the department's response is part of a whole-of-government approach that the Trump administration is taking. And the Department of Justice is primarily in the law enforcement business, so that's our most significant part in combating the opioid crisis. But the government's overall approach involves a whole range of efforts that are focused on trying to reduce the use of lawful, even lawful opioids, trying to ensure that people only use them when they're actually medically necessary, make sure the doctors are not prescribing opioids to people who don't need them, trying to reduce the supply of illegal opioids, particularly fentanyl, most of which comes from China, which is responsible for the majority of the deaths, and obviously treating people who are drug addicts. I think it's important to provide appropriate treatment and to establish an effective deterrent so that we prevent people from becoming addicted in the future.
Yeah, and so the timing of your piece comes just as lawmakers in California send a bill to the governor's desk trying to legalize, codifying under state law, a safe injection site. You know, and as you know, there are a number of initiatives around the country that are trying to act similarly. And these are sites in which, you know, those struggling with addiction can obtain clean needles to use opioids, and they're under medical supervision. The idea is to provide a safe place for people to use drugs and also provide sort of a bridge to treatment. And studies have repeatedly shown that the model has saved lives in Canada, Australia, and across Europe. Why won't this model work in the U.S.?
Well, you pack a lot of assumptions into that question, many of which I believe are not true. Most significantly, this idea that there are scientific studies that prove that this safe injection site idea is going to save lives. I think those scientific studies don't demonstrate that. And in fact, there has been some criticism recently about those studies. Most significantly, I think what they don't consider at all is the unintended consequence of the government sanctioning this sort of activity. You know, the fact that fentanyl and other dangerous opioid drugs are illegal really does have a significant deterrent impact. It sends the right message to people who are not yet addicted but might be tempted to do it in the future. And if local governments get in the business of facilitating drug use, of telling people we're going to help you, not just handing out needles, because they're not just handing out needles, they're actually inviting people to bring these illegal drugs into their places of business and use those illegal drugs under their supervision. If you start down that road, you're really going to undermine the deterrent message that I think is so important in order to prevent people from becoming addicted in the future.
And I can't help but think about the AIDS crisis, and you just mentioned needle exchanges and how they helped contain the crisis, right? And, you know, distributing hypodermic needles under federal law is considered distributing drug paraphernalia, right? It's technically illegal, yet the federal government took sort of a hands-off approach to needle exchanges, and they did help combat the crisis. So in your mind, how is the opioid crisis and supervised injection sites really different?
Well, I don't think this has very much in common with what you refer to as a needle exchange program, which may or may not raise issues depending upon what the intent is of the people who are distributing the needles. But what you're talking about here is setting up a site, a location, that is expressly for the purpose of facilitating illegal activity and of helping people engage in illegal activity. It's not just about giving them a needle. It's actually about giving them what they refer to as a safe place to engage in criminal activity. And keep in mind, the drugs these people are injecting, these are not drugs that are provided from by pharmacies that are medically safe. These are drugs that they're buying on the street or getting through the internet. They have no idea what's in them. They're known to be extraordinarily dangerous. You know, this modern forms of fentanyl and fentanyl analogs that people are now buying are contributing to an extraordinary number of deaths because they're unsafe. And so if anybody finds out that somebody's about to inject fentanyl, the right thing to do is to persuade them not to do it. It's not to help them do it.
I don't know if you've ever been in, say, a neighborhood like Kensington, Philadelphia. You see needles piled up almost on every street corner. There's people passed out in yards, in bathrooms, under bridges. This is a scourge that is happening in Philadelphia and across the country. And people who live in these neighborhoods, I mean, there are mixed opinions. There's some people who think it's going to invite further drug use, and then there's other people who say this is already happening in our backyard. We might as well put it in a medically supervised facility, right? But this is already happening. So in terms of the abuse and the visibility of people using these drugs, so advocates say, why not take it off the streets? It's already happening, and at least save lives by having it done and having people administering these dangerous drugs in a way where they're not rushed, in a way where they could use clean needles and hopefully provide them with some treatment. But I guess in the eyes of federal law enforcement, that's not something that would ever fly.
Well, my suggestion would be that if you have money to invest in this sort of activity, in San Francisco, for example, they're talking about $2.5 million a year, you should be investing in real treatment, not in facilitating drug abuse. Now, there are legitimate forms of treatment that can be provided that help people come off of addictions, that help cure people of addictions, and that's a legitimate and I think a valuable contribution to the effort, but that's very different from facilitating drug use. I think it's impossible to do this sort of thing without sending the wrong message both to the drug abusers and to other people about what the government thinks about this problem. You can't possibly think you're going to solve the problem that you've described in Kensington by setting up a place where people can actually come and legally, at least with the sanction of the local government, inject drugs. Because keep in mind, it's not really about legalization. No local government, no state government can legalize the use of illegal heroin and fentanyl. It's illegal under federal law. And if anybody thinks this is a good idea, there's a way to accomplish that. Try to persuade the U.S. Congress to legalize it. Because until you do that, it's going to remain illegal in addition to being a bad idea.
Right. And so, you know, philosophically, advocates of these injection sites say the federal government is trying to approach the opioid crisis as kind of a moral failure rather than a medical condition. They call the people who are addicted to opioids, they say they have a disease, right? Do you think that is an unfair characterization? And do you think federal law enforcement has anything in common with some of these public health advocates who are trying to come up with novel and controversial ways to address a crisis? Desperate times call for desperate measures. Do you have anything in common with these folks?
I think that you know, whether you characterize it as a moral failing or as a medical condition, the question you should be asking is, what's causing it? You know, these people did not start as opioid addicts. They became addicted because they had access to unlawful opioids. And so our goal should be to try to deter that, to persuade people about the dangers of opioid drugs, to try to reduce the supply of illegal and dangerous opioid drugs by prosecuting traffickers and by limiting the importation of these drugs from places like China and Mexico. That's what we should be focusing on, not trying to facilitate it. It's just not a solution. I certainly appreciate that there are people out there who are trying to help, but I think they ought to focus their help in a way that's much more constructive. And they ought to consider the message that they're sending, not just to current drug abusers, but to people who might become addicted in the future. The message that they're sending is really critically important. If you look at the surge in opioid overdose deaths that has occurred just over the past 5 years, we have the preliminary numbers are already in for 2017, and they reflect a 73% increase in drug overdose deaths, and about two-thirds of those overdose deaths are caused by opioid drugs. And so we believe the solution to that is better education. It's by trying to prevent people from getting addicted, and it's by providing treatment for people who are addicts. From the Justice Department's perspective, prosecuting the traffickers is a critical way to achieve that. This is not a disease that gets spread like the flu. People can only become addicted if they have access to these illegal drugs. And so if we can prevent that access, we can prevent it, the addiction.
So you wrote in the Times that if cities or states opened these injection sites, they should expect, quote, swift and aggressive action. I'm wondering, Mr. Rosenstein, if you would be more specific about what the enforcement response will really look like.
Well, the federal government has two tools that we can use to combat criminal activity. We can prosecute if the activity violates federal criminal law, and we can demonstrate the elements of the offense. And, of course, you can't predict that in advance. You need to do an investigation and find out who might be criminally accountable. But we also have the ability under the Controlled Substances Act to pursue an injunction. That is a civil order that a court would impose to order somebody to stop engaging in unlawful activity, to stop distributing drugs illegally. And so both of those tools are available. And I think if the situation arose where we determined that somebody was in violation of the law, we'd have to evaluate the facts and make a determination about what's the appropriate approach to take. But for the people who are considering engaging in this sort of activity, I think it's critical. They need to consult with lawyers and understand what their potential criminal and civil liability will be. Because just because somebody tells you in San Francisco that San Francisco is not going to prosecute you for doing something, that does not make it legal. It remains illegal under federal law, and people who engage in that activity remain vulnerable to civil and criminal enforcement.
And sort of carrying that forward, I'm wondering if you could talk about how far the criminal culpability spreads in your view. So are mayors and governors criminally responsible? Would nurses and medical workers be under the threat of arrest?
I don't want to speculate about it. As I said, everybody needs to make their own determination based upon their personal conduct as to what their culpability might be. But I think medical professionals understand. They know that they have a responsibility to treat addicts, but they also have a responsibility not to be involved in the distribution of or use of illegal substances. So I think medical professionals are already well aware of their responsibilities.
And some cities are considering mobile injection sites, so a facility in a van, say, or some sort of portable structure, a tent or something like that. Can you imagine these creative ideas, I guess you can call them, will really help localities evade the federal government?
Bobby, I think it's important to keep in mind, when you talk about somebody coming in and somebody who has a problem, and you characterize it as a medical condition, let's accept that. It's a medical condition. Somebody comes into a doctor with a medical condition. There are legitimate forms of medical treatment for substance abuse and addiction. There are medically approved drugs that can be provided. There's counseling that can be provided. There are legitimate ways for medical professionals to treat addiction. Helping the person to ingest or inject a substance that can kill them is not an appropriate form of medical treatment.
And I don't mean to be glib here, but I mean, I'm wondering if you could assure the American public that this isn't just saber-rattling. So critics of the administration say, the Justice Department rescinded Obama-era guidance on marijuana prosecutions, but there's been no enforcement actions since then. And there's a lot of cities and states that have legalized in some form marijuana. Tell me why this is different.
Well, the most significant thing to keep in mind about these illegal substances, that is fentanyl, heroin, and other similar opioid drugs that are unlawful, is that they are killing people. There's no dispute about this, that about two-thirds of the overdose deaths are attributable to various forms of opioid drugs. In fact, in 2017, about close to 50,000 people lost their lives. And that's just the people who died. Many people are being injured by virtue of these substances, and they're winding up in hospitals. They're having to be revived with naloxone, which is a drug that reverses the effects of opioids. So these are extraordinarily harmful drugs, and I think that's one of the things that makes this a very different situation, that there's no dispute, even by the proponents of this, there's no dispute that these drugs can cause death.
But this isn't posturing, you're saying. You're saying if one of these opens, there really will be a federal response. This isn't a matter of the federal government saying, don't try this, as kind of a symbolic gesture. There concretely will be a response. You can guarantee the American public that.
We have a responsibility, Bobby, to enforce the law. And if we see anybody facilitating activities that's going to result in potential deaths, that's going to fuel illegal drug use and addiction, the government has a responsibility to take action.
So public health advocates say, look, states and cities have long been laboratories of legal innovation, and we're in the middle of a public health crisis. Why not, they would say, allow states chart their own path? Let them develop a local response to a local problem.
Well, the principle here, Bobby, is that Congress has made a determination to outlaw these extraordinarily dangerous drugs. And the truth is, there's a general consensus in the medical community that when you're talking about illegal fentanyl that's produced in some lab in China and imported in the United States illegally through Mexico or in the mail, everybody understands this is a really dangerous substance. This is not something people should be experimenting with or should be facilitating. We should be doing everything we can to prevent people from using these drugs.
Have you ever been to a supervised injection site abroad?
As you know, we don't have any in the United States, and I haven't personally visited one, but I have certainly read up about them, and I understand what impact they can have on the community.
You're worried. You've read about it having a deleterious effect to the community. Can you talk about what you see as the possible community impact if one opened in the United States?
Well, if you're in the neighborhood that opens what they call a safe injection site, remember the whole idea is you're going to bring the illegal drug addicts into the neighborhood, and you're not giving them the drugs. They have to buy the drugs. This is a black market that often involves violence. And so you're bringing all that into one neighborhood where you open up this injection site. So that's one of the immediate concrete harms, but as I said, the more significant thing is the unintended consequences in terms of the message that you're sending in the broader community.
And some, you know, legal experts I've talked to, you know, legal scholars and attorneys who study federal drug law say that federal drug statutes were never intended to apply to a medical facility like a supervised injection site. And as you know, it's never been tested in federal court. So wondering if you could talk about how confident you are that the federal laws the Justice Department is hoping to invoke here to prosecute these potential injection sites would actually prevail in court.
Well, I don't know who are the anonymous legal experts you're consulting with, but I'm not aware of any valid basis for the argument that you can engage in criminal activity as long as you do it in the presence of somebody with a medical license.
I was just saying, going to the other point of this issue never being tested in the courts, that using these federal drug statutes to go after a supervised injection site, that particular question has never been, there's never been a test case. There's no case law around that. You're saying it's more black and white, like, look, they're using an illegal narcotic. We can prosecute them. But they're saying they would mount a defense on public health grounds, on federalism grounds, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just wondering, because there hasn't been any clear path in the courts in terms of case law, whether you think it would still be a pretty open shut or the federal government would still have a strong case in court.
Yes, Bobby, I actually think that you're mistaken about that. I think that it is very clear, and there is precedent. We routinely prosecute doctors, pharmacists, and other medical professionals who are involved in illegally prescribing opioid drugs. This conduct is far more egregious, I think, than that, in the sense that the hypothetical that you have in mind involves medical professionals who know that people are using illegal drugs without any confidence about what's in the substances. So they know that poses a significant harm to the patient, and they should not be involved in facilitating the use of something that they know can be damaging to their patient. Mm-hmm. So I'm being told by Kelly we need to wrap it up. You have one or two more questions?
Yep, I have one or two more questions. Sounds good. So in surveys that have been conducted in Philadelphia, for instance, people who are addicted to opioids, two-thirds of them say they would go to an injection site, right? And advocates say very clearly this would save lives. So not allowing them to open, in their view, is letting people die on the streets. What's your response to that?
I think we've already talked about this, Bobby. As I said, the goal should be to cure people who are already addicted and to deter people from becoming addicted in the future, not to facilitate use. If you facilitate use, you prolong it, you just increase the odds that somebody's ultimately going to die because they're going to keep taking illegal drugs.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Rosenstein, on a personal level, how are you doing?
Just great, thank you.
I ask because, you know, you're under a lot of pressure right now. I'm wondering if that makes your job more difficult.
I'm just here to talk about opioids, but I can tell you it's a very rewarding job, Bobby. We accomplish a lot of tremendous things for the American people here at the Department of Justice. We have 115,000 employees in the department who are working every day to keep America safe, to protect America's national security, and it's very rewarding to be able to work with these folks every day. So I want to thank you very much, and thank you, Kelly, for holding the microphone. And Bobby, I wish you well. Thank you very much.
Mr. Rosenstein, thank you for finding time for me. I really do appreciate it. Take care.
You're welcome.